We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Station.
Let's hold off on the dime segment because, Ray, we're talking sanctimonious baseball douchebags. Why aren't these writers circling the wagons and demanding answers?
I think they are. I don't think Marwin Gonzalez ran out into the dugout today and just put on a performance that nobody asked for.
Well, he did show up early specifically to give the performance.
It's kind of what Tim said he did.
But the point is there were people to hear it.
Okay.
Sure.
I mean, the fact, look, this broke during the offseason when there aren't baseball writers at every ballpark or loitering around the MLB offices. This is one of those things where you can't make the story, but you can react and report the story. And the fact is this doesn't get to be a story if Mike Fiers doesn't roll. And it's sort of like the steroid thing where people were blaming baseball writers for not knowing more. Well, I checked. There were no chemists writing baseball at the time.
Well, but also,
and you cannot report that someone is performing a felonious act without proof.
That's right. They knew. They just couldn't report it.
Yeah, exactly. And the only guy who broke that silence was a guy who wasn't a baseball writer.
He's a baseball player.
Well, no. I'm talking about Steve Wilstein.
Oh, okay.
Who saw the little bottle in Mark McGuire's room and reported
Andrustine Dione.
That's what the bottle is. That's all he did. And that was indisputable. He didn't say that McGuire took it. He said that he had it.
Right.
And everything jumped out from there. And that's the point is baseball writers, for whatever you may think of them, aren't empowered not by their newspapers, not by their not by their outlets, not by their HR departments to report things as fact unless they can prove them. And suspecting that people are on HGH or anything else, you have to see them put it in. And if you can't do that, you don't have that one.
It'd be great if they use that same standard when convicting people in absentia for using and therefore not voting them into the Hall of Fame. But Ray is certainly right.
No, we got proof, though, about this Astros scandal. I mean, steroids is now a whole other conversation. We got dead-to-rights, proven court of law, fired other dugout managers. I mean, like, it is done. There's no "you don't know what really happened" rock for the Astros to hide behind. So how could they?
But they are reporting on it. We don't know any of this stuff if they're not writing about it and talking about it all the time. They are doing their job.
And as much as
better than John Boy Media.
As much as you might like to have people go bang trash can, well, to Ray's point, John Boy Media is less beholden to things like sources and proof than
he doesn't have an HR department
writer. But the real question is, yes, we'd love if all the writers went and banged trash cans in the press room, but realistically, what recourse do you have if they're not answering those questions? Because your job is still to cover that team for the rest of the year. I'm not sure if the Astros aren't willing to share, and so far we've really only seen former Astros willing to share. So if that organization tells its players basically not to comment, I'm not sure what writers can do.
More to the point, no writers could have heard the trash cans because they're in the press box.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's all ambient noise to them. So, unless you've got somebody with super hearing or they've trained a pack of bloodhounds to type, they're not going to get that story anyway. And truthfully, if it was just John Boy Sports reporting, "I have suspicious trash can news to report," it doesn't fly unless it's corroborated by somebody who was there.
It took Fiers putting it out for John Boy Media to be a real story. And
Fiers
not just
putting it out, no pun intended. I didn't even think of that. Where you make a point that's worth chewing on, there are baseball media people, like there are football media people, like there are basketball media people who believe they work for the sport, not for the people that pay them. And they think they are the defenders of the sport, when in fact, it's not their job to defend the sport. If they wallow into a mess like the Astros thing, and they say this is bad for the game, their response should automatically be, that's not my problem. I don't work for the game. I work for the New York Times, or I work for ESPN. You know, it's the attitude that they are guardians of the game that gets them in trouble more than anything else. It's not poor reportage. It's the idea that without them, the game can be sullied. Well, that's nonsense. You're supposed to report when it sullies itself. That's your job. And I think in this case, the baseball writers have done their job, because in the steroid era, there were a lot fewer people in sports writing or sports media who could do it, because that story had to be broken by people who understand chemistry, who understand conspiracy, who understand the legal system.
And also, it had to be broken by one of 10 legitimate sports reporting outlets. Like, there was not nearly as many boots on the ground media-wise at that time, right?
Well, as an example, the whole Balco thing got broken because of a couple of reporters at the San Mateo Times.
Fenerwata.
No. The first reports came from these people, from these two reporters, and I forget their names, and I'm sorry. But for the San Mateo Times, the Chronicle saw that, and they sent Mark Fenerwata and Lance Williams to nose around. And they became, that's the people who broke that story.
Right.
And people
they
who followed them.
It wasn't to the baseball sports
writers, because baseball writers weren't covering that. They were covering the baseball games, because that's what they were assigned to do. So that's why it's not, you know, it's not the people who don't break the story that I have a problem with. It's the people who forget who they work for, which is the company that, you know, the media company that pays them, and the people who view their product. When they forget that that's who they work for and that's who they're beholden to, that's when you get what you're talking about.
888-957-9570. Josh is in Livermore. Hello, Josh.
Hey, guys, how are you today? I see some eerie reminiscence. I'm a bit of a baseball historian, but in 100 years ago, there was the White Sox scandal that goes on. I know that was players that were upset with their owner and they felt they were underpaid, but this was a collective team that is chosen to break the rules and to defy baseball. And I think it's just oddly reminiscent how history repeats itself. And I think that there were, at the time when this was happening in 1919, there were reporters like yourselves that were chomping at the bit to expose these individuals. And I think right now we're doing the same thing. So I just think it's oddly interesting how 100 years from now, we're still kind of doing the same thing in sports, and specifically the game of baseball.
There's always going to be something criminal about everything, because where there's money, there's somebody who wants it, who doesn't deserve it.
Very true. The crazy thing was it felt like the Astros were deserving of the contention that I think that they would have naturally been in had none of this occurred. Like, I just watched that team. They were a lot better than this. That's the thing. It actually robs a wildly talented team that was a runaway success of any respect in the pecking order of history. Like, this, all Houston Astros success will be dismissed on sight for at least a decade.
How about A.J. Hinch? He's a guy who, his first managing job, people said, oh, this guy's not good at this. Gets the job with the Astros. And
oh, he's good at this.
Oh, he figured it out. This guy's really good. You think he ever gets hired again?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
MLB sort of put him on a contrition tour this week.
Okay.
Everybody in Major League Baseball understands that he wasn't the mastermind here. The guy who doesn't get a job again is Jeff Luhnow.
Okay.
Because he's the guy who was the most arrogant. And he was the one that everything had to be cleared through. This was not, you know, Carlos Beltran or Alex Cora going rogue.
Right.
You know, it just, you know, I mean, when Hinch took out the first monitor and the next day it magically reappeared, well, that's not because one of the Astros players decided to run over to Best Buy and pick up a 4G set. It just, that came from on top. And the fact is, Jeff Luhnow would have a job today if he could have adequately proven that he wasn't involved, but he was in it up to his eyelids. And Hinch becomes collateral damage, and I think people in baseball recognize that he's collateral damage. And the fact that he's sort of gone out in front of the story and basically sort of, you know, played the penitent will probably get him a job within a couple of years at the latest.
So because we'll never get the apology from the guy who probably was most guilty of the entire conspiracy, do you need one from anyone? I mean, there has been such a diaspora of Houston Astros now to other teams. Like, I don't know if a guy wearing another uniform needs to stand up like Marwin Gonzalez did today in Minnesota and apologize for something that happened a dugout ago. I don't know what the real value is of it, yet oddly, even though I'm not a you owe me an apology guy, I feel like I kind of need one in some weird way. Like, someone needs to acknowledge, yeah, we screwed you over. We screwed you over. We did it. We're not giving back the rings or a dime of our paycheck, and the history books say we're the champs. Like,
that's the thing to me, is what is that apology worth?
Right. But I'm not one for symbolic acts either. I don't know why I want one.
But if you're not demanding the apology, there wouldn't be a need for one. The fact is, people are around Marwin Gonzalez, and people are going to be around the Astros and all the ex-Astros who passed through and got jewelry, and they're going to keep asking because we perceive that an apology is important, whether in fact it is or not.
Well, I think that's one thing Marwin Gonzalez got right here, right? Is
no,
I can get out in front of this. And I don't know exactly how it's going to go. If I don't say anything, we'll see. Maybe no one ever asks, or maybe I get asked about it every day. But if I show up, address it directly, answer questions, and then say that's it on this, I think people are probably going to respect that.
How about this? If you were a pitcher who got teed off by the Houston Astros, you can have all the code reds you want. I'm not going to talk about how, you know, it's really unfair to be able to throw that at people. You could really hurt somebody with that baseball. No, go ahead. You can throw way inside whenever the moment strikes you.
Somehow, the response to the Black Sox scandal shouldn't have been Ray Chapman.
888-957-9570. Much more coming up here. Don't you move a muscle. We've got some dimes. Oh, a helpful segment. Advice for the good people of the world. Fantastic. Some great advice for Andre Iguodala going forward. I think he's pretty much set up what he wants to do.
Not sure he needs it.
It was good to see him last night. He went maximum Iguodala back at Chase Center. Steve Kerr will be by about that in the 5 o'clock hour, so don't you go anywhere. A Tuesday trifecta will still be yours this afternoon. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, you're on 95.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome, welcome. So a mystery radio signal that is originating from 500 million light years away from Earth is repeating itself every 16 days, according to the New York Daily News.
Is it really a mystery? Yeah, we know what it is. It's
not that much of a mystery. It's on Sirius.
It's a life form on a planet, 500 million. Like, what's confusing?
No, you think they got radio?
No, yeah. The confusing part is that you rarely get signals that happen that regularly and that predictably.
I can think of one other, the one we send out. Like, well, this is what a civilization would do.
If you're looking for life,
if you're wondering,
elsewhere.
Hey, is anyone going to get this if I send it out into space? We do that.
But why
humans
would they
do that?
It every 16 days? Because communication probably doesn't work on a 16-day cycle if that's all you're doing is sending out noises once every 16 days.
Well, it would be a beacon.
Maybe that's how long it takes for their orbit to turn around to flash at our... I don't know. Look,
you're looking for someone to respond.
If we can't handle the Houston Astros cheating scandal, life in other galaxies is going to be a doozy.
It's going to be tricky.
It. Yeah, it really is.
It's going to take them a long time to get here. That's the good news.
Well, this planet will be a gaseous ball of garbage by the time they get here.
So. Which happens first, the invasion or Andrew Wiggins is an all-star? 888-957-9570.
Yeah.
We will be talking about Andrew Wiggins.
That is a really good question.
Thank you very much. Yeah. The Alien Nation or Wiggins all-star.
I know what I'm rooting for, and it has nothing to do with Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, put it on the poll, as Dan Le Batard would say. Jay Center last night got the official radio signal from Andre Iguodala. It pings with one shot, 2 points, and a plus 25. You know that there's life in Iguodala when you see a stat line like that. It led the... Heat to play as an efficient game as they've maybe played all year. Would they have like 35, 36 assists? Kelly Olynyk had a career high last night. Heat got the ball hopping. Bam Adebayo nearly triple-doubled last night. They looked really good against an undermanned Golden State Warrior team, which – people seem to forget about whenever they would just want to cast aspersions on whatever deal was happening. I can't read another story about how this deal for Andrew Wiggins was only for the draft picks. I think it was for Andrew Wiggins, too. And I'd like us to wait at least a week of practices before people are issuing declarative statements about a guy who has never been in a good situation and technically isn't even in one right now based on who his on-court teammates are. He's running out there with guys named Juan Tabasco Gomez, or just—I mean, I don't even
know
their names.
You leave Juan Toscano Anderson alone.
Yeah, that guy.
He's Oakland's very own.
Yeah, I mean, what? Come on, you're out there playing with dudes who are lefty three-point shooters who get cut from summer league teams.
And again, I'll just say this: people are not ripping Andrew Wiggins for being here. They are saying this is his history, and you're entitled to not read some of the stupid stuff. I tend to go to the Zach Lowe guys, the Kevin O'Connor guys, who study this a lot. And they either, and for the most part, they've taken no opinion on it. They say it's an interesting notion that they'd love to see play out. But nobody's declared after two games, this is a success or this is a failure or the Warriors are nuts or the Warriors are geniuses.
Well, I think it's interesting you chose those two guys because they're both on record as not liking Andrew Wiggins as a player. And yet, if you listen to the way they analyze the trade, they do it like professionals.
Well,
and I think
point.
That's what Ray is talking about, yeah, is listen to professionals. And a professional like Zach Lowe or Kevin O'Connor, who don't like Andrew Wiggins that much, I think both of those guys would tell you outright, they think in a vacuum, D'Angelo Russell is a better basketball player than Andrew Wiggins. And yet, when you listen to their analysis of this trade, as I have with both guys, they get into the nuances of it. They talk about why it could work with the Warriors and what the reasons the Warriors think it might be able to work are, and also the draft pick. And that's true with all our sports stuff. There are so many voices now, and so many of them are sensationalist garbage.
Or just stupid.
Or stupid. You just have to find the smart professional people.
And the other thing, and I don't want to beat this into the ground, but I think it's important to note that it's not that they don't like Andrew Wiggins. They haven't liked him.
Right.
And there's a difference.
Okay.
And the difference is what they've seen of him, they have not been impressed with, but they are at least curious enough to see how he will fit in an entirely new situation than the one he's been in for 6 years.
You're right. It's not dislike of Andrew Wiggins. It is they don't believe he has been good so far.
And that's indisputable.
No, it's a judgment that they've made, and of course it's reasonable.
I mean, there's levels of disappointment, but saying a guy who's like a 20-point-a-night scorer in the NBA sucks at being an NBA player, well, that's just based on you wanting a talking point to be right more than you know what it takes to succeed in this league. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, the amount of people who in their lives are declaring an Andrew Wiggins failure who will never even come close to that level of success is staggering to me. Absolutely staggering to me. And we got just nonsense everywhere. And you do have to disseminate what is noise and what is message. And there's way too many people disguising their noise as an actual message that you need to receive. Larry Taxi over in Oakland. What's going on, Larry?
Damon, how you doing? Your kid, I haven't called in a while. Your kid must be in college by now.
Yeah. Already in the nursing home.
Great. You should be there. Hey, listen, that baseball thing, the most ridiculous thing ever. I can't believe it. But you know what it is, Damon and Ray? It's basically a distraction from those cheating Astros and Red Sox. They got to get everyone off that case and onto this one because, you know, it's definitely a mark.
It's funny. It's funny that you bring that up, Larry, because, you know, is this how baseball's going to modernize itself? By realizing we need to chase outrage with another branch of outrage that people will then start hanging from instead of the other branch? Like, is that nothing could be more 2020 than, we got a level of outrage over here, so what do you think we should do? Give them something else to be outraged about. Just transfer outrage from one topic to another, to another, to another.
Well, I don't know how well it worked because this morning, the Washington Post published an article with the headline, "The World Just Learned of Astros Cheating. Inside Baseball, It Was an Open Secret." And here's the other thing. If they actually wanted to distract people successfully for longer than a week, I think both the way to do that and, frankly, the honest, best way to, quote, save baseball, if saving it means getting more eyes on it, is a much more radical, I don't want to say reconstruction, but change to the way the game is played every day during the regular season. And there's no way baseball will do this until it's way too late. But I don't think there's any saving baseball by adding playoff games or changing playoff formats. I think saving baseball means making it a product that today's consumer is interested in, and that just means pretty radical changes to the way the game is played, which I don't think the sport has any stomach for.
I think baseball's scared as hell about their next TV deal because they know that we get to live in a more fractured viewing world than ever before, and baseball isn't a national sport as much as it is a local sport disguised as a national conversation. And that's why in the postseason, it's the only postseason in all sports that has less attention on it than maybe its regular season, because the fracturing gets into smaller and smaller tribes the fewer and fewer teams remain. And it's the even though they're, you know, not many people in Kansas City and the Bay Area is not the largest place in the world. Everyone still watched the Super Bowl. That's the way that works. Baseball needs something else, a new bow ribbon to tie into its next TV package so the bidding and interest remains robust. And I think that they know the regular season is almost unsalvageable. So what do? Let's gussy up the postseason with
a new
short skirt.
Well, that's exactly it. The postseason changes will affect the TV contract, but not the actual interest in the game. And like I keep pointing out with all these sports, that's incredibly short-sighted thinking.
Right, we got fixes that don't fix anything.
That's right, because yes, maybe it makes you a few extra million in this TV contract, but it makes the game much harder to sustain long-term, which means the next TV contract might be half as much.
The next TV contract might be half as much anyway, because that's the fair. Same thing that's happening in all the other sports is happening with baseball as well. And that is, you don't know how important the networks are going to be in 5 years. They know that a lot of their individual teams make tons of money off regional sports networks. And between cord cutting and the people who don't have televisions anymore, you know, I mean, the technology is changing, the viewing habits are changing, the game is changing, and they are desperately trying to see if they can get one more big TV score before they have to fully confront the fact that their business model, at least as it disseminates its game, is not in free fall, but fulminating wildly, and nobody really knows where it goes. Somebody made an important point the other day about the Super Bowl. They announced that they got 105 to 110 million viewers, which they promptly says closer to 135 or 140 million because you're counting all the people who go to parties. So if there's 20 people in the living room, they're trying to take credit for those. And yet, it's less than one-third of the population of the United States. And 20 years ago, the Super Bowl did a much higher percentage, so that maybe everybody's viewing habits are changing based on how they just consume stuff.
Well, but people were having parties and people over in their living room 20 years ago as well that weren't being counted then.
I'm merely telling you what experts on this stuff are saying, that that all sports are undergoing significant change to the point where they don't know how solid their audience is going to be in 5 years. And that includes football. And it's not about whether the game's going to die or not. None of these games are going to die while any of us are alive. But they're going to have to figure out how they make the money they make in different ways. And that's where this is. That's why the next baseball TV contract matters.
Well, and a huge part of this also is just the business world in general has done a horrible job of monetizing the internet since the beginning of the internet.
They haven't done a horrible job. They've done no job.
Well, I
when
mean,
you give something away for free and then you charge for it, your customer base drops off precipitously.
Yeah, so that's not entirely true, because obviously there's ads and things like that that have been used in certain ways. But the internet and streaming have traditionally been monetized by people who try to graft what they did to monetize a magazine onto a web page. And instead, and hopefully at some point, these things will be done by people who understand the dynamics of the actual web side of it. And I think that's where a lot of these leagues should be putting their efforts, is how do we properly monetize the digital streaming that we control?
Feels like times like this call for three guys who work with microphones who could give some good advice to help some people who might have some questions in the world. Little advice. Let's drop some dimes.
Are you in need of a helping hand?
Help, I need somebody.
Perhaps a little assistance.
Help, you know I need someone. Help,
help me help you.
Dropping dimes, dropping dimes.
How can I help you?
Dropping dimes, dropping dimes.
Now, it's time for Damon's Dimes.
But everyone gets to play along. We need to change that open, by the way. Welcome. Dimes are here, which means Nash, or as we like to call him, not Elena. Nash, welcome to the show. What have you got for us today? What can we help the world out with? A little free advice. The advice counter's open.
I like to call him Short Elena.
I get that a lot. First on the docket today. So the All-Star break's coming up this weekend, gentlemen. I know you guys are looking forward to it because you get some time off from not watching the NBA. But what about the players and the Warriors in specific? What should the Warriors do over their All-Star break?
Man, I think this team needs to get as far away from the sport of basketball as possible. They need to just breathe a little out their third eyelid, meditate, and come back and get ready to get your teeth kicked in the remaining 30 games or whatever the hell is left. It's been a long year for those guys. All of them have competitive juices flowing that have not been satisfied in any ways. So in a grin and bear it year, they just got to keep grinning and bearing it and use this week to just sort of clear your mind, man. Just get all the cobwebs out. It's got to be tough going out and getting your ass kicked by grown men every single night. It's brutal. They used to be on the kicking side of it, by the way. So turnabout's fair play, I guess.
Most of the guys on this team have not been on that side.
Yeah, well, you're right about that.
Yeah. No, the Golden State Warriors as an organization are used to that. This group of players is not. I mean, I haven't sat down and figured out what Andrew Wiggins' one loss record is over his six-plus years.
It's a loss record.
0-2 here.
But it's horrendous.
Yeah, it's bad.
So what's your advice for a little off All-Star break?
Drink.
Solid.
Yeah, I mean, that was going to be my advice. I do think some of the guys, like Marquise Chris, should be staring at the Rising Stars game saying, I belong there. I don't know what the rules are. He might be too old. But for the most part, these guys need a break. I think the idea of getting as far away from basketball as possible and drinking fit nicely together.
The toughest choice they should make, indica or sativa.
You know what's a good thing to do, too, is like hit a beach. You know what I mean? Like an all-inclusive beach resort. Just sit on the beach and have blended drinks brought to you with umbrellas.
That's what I plan on doing during the All-Star break and some indica and sativa.
I'll be very jealous of
that. Yeah. All right. What do we got? Nash.
Oh, Friday, Valentine's Day. You guys are all three married men, so I know you're looking forward to it. What advice do you guys have to give to all the young, lovely couples out there, the old couples, any couple out there?
Wow. A little Valentine's Day advice.
How's the prime rib?
Never hurts, but how about this? The best thing you can do on Valentine's Day is a little card. Here you go. And then in about a week, you go out to dinner. Or you did what I did with Jillian, and that was knock out Valentine's Day last Friday.
Monday is President's Day. Huh? It's a good day for Valentine's Day.
Yeah, it's like you get... It's a brutal night to get a reservation.
Here's the other thing, though, quickly, because before we trash Valentine's Day as a Hallmark holiday that makes all the restaurants crowded, which is 100% true. Flowers.
The world needs fellas, love?
Oh. The world does need love, but flowers, they really go a long way. Everyone likes to receive flowers. Even if your lady is someone who's like, unless she's got severe allergies, even if she's like, I don't really care about flowers, the act of picking up the flowers and giving them to her is a guaranteed win.
Might I suggest, though, that plays so much better on 364 other days? Do it randomly.
That's true.
The one day where you're supposed to show your wife that you actually, what's the word? Love her. Yeah, that's right.
That's a good point. Flowers on like a Tuesday, just a random Tuesday.
Ray, how do you keep the how do you keep the flame lit?
We stay in separate rooms a lot.
Nice. Yeah. Two twin beds right next to each other, 3 feet apart.
No. Three rooms apart.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, Ray, you're a Netflix guy. Don't lie. You watch some Netflix with the missus.
And chill.
Nash, I want you to take this opportunity to shut up.
Best advice I've gotten all day.
I love how Nash uses the word Netflix as it's the word sex.
I love how Ray tells him to shut up and we can hear Lucas cackling in the background.
All right. More advice.
Last one on the docket, gentlemen. Valentine's. The last few days, and especially last night, we've seen some crazy NBA uniforms. This year, we've seen the Memphis Grizzlies use their throwbacks that we all love. I think I personally want the advice on this. Are we starting to lose the touch on these beautiful alternatives and throwback jerseys by seeing them almost on a nightly occurrence?
Yeah, so less is more. I cannot stress this enough. And the first rule of show business is always leave them wanting more. An alternative jersey that I see a third of the games that you play, it's not an alternative jersey. It's your third jersey that you keep in heavy rotation. It's just too much. It's like interleague play. It's great if you keep it to a week. If you do it every day, it's just another game. It's too much. It really is. I think it's too much. And by the way, I officially saw the worst alternative jersey out there beyond the spray-painted Dallas Mavericks atrocity. The Oklahoma City, or no, was it the
Orlando Magic?
The Orlando Magic last night came out dressed like the Oklahoma State Cowboys.
Yeah, they're terrible. I've seen those. They wore them earlier this year, too. It doesn't make any sense. They're like alternate Suns jerseys.
You'd think that the game was going to be played in the Henry Iba Arena or something, the Gallagher Arena. Like, it's just.
I'm impressed you knew those arenas.
Terrible. It's the Henry Iba Gallagher Arena.
Where does the orange come from? They're no orange in their color scheme, right?
I don't know.
It doesn't make any sense.
In Orlando sunset?
And at least, like, the Miami Vice shirts are something we can all, like, understand where it's coming from.
Yeah! Yo-yo cocaine 80s!
It was the same thing to me with the Peachtree Atlanta uniforms. Like, I'm sure Peachtree is an important thing in Atlanta, and that's great and all, but...
No, it's the color,
the Red Kings jerseys?
The color scheme's all wrong. Well, but the Red Kings jerseys have some history. At least, right? I mean, that's throwing back to old.
No, the Kings jersey's never been red. It's been baby blue, and before that, when they were in Cincinnati, it was royal blue.
I thought it was baby blue with red,
The Kings have a jersey
red trim,
okay.
But no, the dominant color has always been
blue or purple.
A blue or purple.
The Kings do have a jersey that is. It looks like a Washington Bullets jersey.
Yeah.
It's the same as the blue jersey they wear now, but they just made it red because there's a red trim on it. So it's an alternative.
Oh, so they flipped.
Two's are throwback alternative jerseys.
That's confusing.
Inception.
But, generally speaking, the throwback to old colors or like the tie to something famous in the city is good for me. But like one of the things I kind of appreciate about the Bulls is they more or less stick with the Bulls stuff. Like there's not a lot of overly creative nonsense except that one Stags thing they wore that had blue shirts and red shorts, which was very bad.
Well, but that was the original team in Chicago.
Right.
So, the, I mean, so that had historical
validity. Or like the Celtics,
validity.
Right? Well, the Celtics are pretty much just the green Celtics jerseys
with
or black.
Occasional gold.
Yeah, once.
Occasional black.
But it's not like the Orlando and,
no.
you know, well, pulling
okay,
stuff out of
but
nowhere.
But in fairness, the Warriors did this when they went to those sort of slate gray, the town jerseys. So, I mean, if you're going to talk about teams abandoning their natural colors, everybody does it.
Right.
The Clippers have never been black and white until this year.
Yeah, no, but you, the, but I think it's just jersey, I like some of those.
The black jersey came out years ago. Like everyone's yes. got one of those now, basically. So it's the Orlando Magic, I was just told by Lucas in my ear, that the Orlando Magic are going with the orange motif for that alternative jersey to pay tribute to Central Florida's citrus industry.
Except it's not even that orange. It's mostly like a bad gray. It's a bad uniform.
And a highlighter orange. It's like electric orange.
And the issue to me really is bad uniforms.
When I think Orlando, I think Disney. I think SeaWorld. I don't think citrus.
None whatsoever.
No.
Like the Disney patch as the sponsor, that makes sense. But yeah. just making a jersey orange because that's the state fruit? Doesn't make sense. You know, are we going to have sourdough jerseys?
You know what the best looking, that would be something. Imagine if like, so you came out and it looked like a whole bunch of bubbling yeast. Like it's all, it's like, it's you call it your starter jersey because it's sourdough starter.
Ew.
It would be weird.
No, I mean, look, the fact is they want this to be a way for insane people to buy every jersey they have.
Right, buy more.
Yeah, I mean, I guarantee you there are Warrior fans out there who have the San Francisco home and road.
Yeah.
They have the town home and road. They have the city home and road. They have the bay home and road. I mean,
as we have this conversation, I'm realizing what I'm really upset about is I think those jerseys are bad. Not that it's the wrong color or anything other than I just think it looks dumb.
It's entirely it's entirely subjective, has no right answer. And all it is really, it's a towering monument to their greed and your gullibility.
The Tootsie Pops, basically Utah Jazz jerseys, supposed to look like a sunset. That's a little hard.
It
on
looks
the
like
eye.
Somebody got too creative with the gradient function on Photoshop. That's what I think of when I look at those.
Well, and yet if you want to knock Orlando, that's basically about Red Rocks. That's what that is.
But it's Utah.
Utah has Red Rocks, too.
Denver Nuggets should be Red Rocks, because that's outside of Denver, actually.
Well, but that's, you know.
Have you ever been to a show at Red Rocks?
I have not.
Have you?
No.
My son has.
It's one place I would very much like to go.
I've hiked it. I've never seen an actual show there, but I went into the amphitheater, and I thought, it'd be a lot cooler if there were a band were on that stage.
Ray's right, by the way. The cascading colors are inspired by the natural beauty of its home state with the famous Red Rock formations.
The Giants have signed a pitcher. Oh, my goodness. We'll let you know who that is. We've also got Steve Kerr for you in the longest commercial-free segment of radio you're going to find anywhere all day long. We got you for the next 45 minutes. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
The Los Angeles Dodgers outfield of Mookie Betts, Cody Bellinger, and Chris Taylor must be trembling with the news that the San Francisco Giants have just agreed to bring in right-hander Trevor Cahill on a minor league deal with an invitation to Scottsdale. Trevor Cahill, Grand Marshal of the World Series Parade.
Mock if you must, but it does speak to what we talked about earlier with Farhan Zaidi, which is you're going to see a lot of players.
Yes, you are. Trevor Cahill is a San Francisco Giant minor league deal with an invitation to Major League spring training.
Yeah. Can I give you the most mildly encouraging news I can give you about Trevor Cahill?
He was an A 2 years ago?
That's not bad, but I have something slightly better. If you're looking at Trevor Cahill's season last year and seeing 5.98 ERA, that's not great. It is under six, but he is expected to be used as a reliever, and as a reliever, his ERA was a robust 4.96.
Hey, his career ERA is a 4.02.
Hey, man.
Or excuse me, 5.02.
Oh.
It's amazing what one notch on an ERA will do.
I'll tell you what, 32 is a lot younger than I would have guessed for Trevor Cahill.
Yeah, he's only 32 years old, 11 major league seasons. Look, he's been around the block. He's not going to be afraid of the moment. He's seen it. He's done it. But, you know, what does he really do? It's his eighth team of his career.
I do also believe his pitching coach last year was Andrew Bailey, correct? Who is now
that is correct.
The pitching coach for the San Francisco Giants.
Well, then maybe that makes a little bit of sense. Andrew Bailey saw something that he wants to continue to mine in a well that he doesn't think is done giving up the gold in Trevor Cahill, the silver, Trevor Cahill, the minerals of Trevor Cahill.
The ore.
The zinc, that is.
Oh, the zinc. Nice. Yeah. Yeah. Took a little zinc this morning. I'm not going to be sick going to Mexico next week.
No, can't have that.
I refuse to.
Can't have that.
Andrew Wiggins. Andrew Wiggins played his second game at Chase Center last night. A lot of people want to tell you that they've already made up their mind on this guy. Those people clearly aren't interested in what the Warriors do with talented players that have come under their umbrella. When you look at who this coaching staff has laid their hands on, they have turned nobodies into somebodies, guys who were has-beens into relevant agains, guys who were complete projects into roster mainstays, and they took guys who were established all-stars and turned them into Hall of Famers. If they weren't Hall of Famers already, they're the best version of the Hall of Fame player that you're probably ever going to see. So I really hope that we can give Andrew Wiggins like at least a week of practice with teammates who probably some of them aren't even NBA players. The declarative statements that have been issued about who Andrew Wiggins is, why they really made a trade, that he's the next D'Angelo Russell, will be he on the next thing smoking out of town before he reveals himself to be capable of improvement. Let me just run some of this past you. How about just starting this year? Jordan Poole. Jordan Poole drafted. Oh, my God, he can't play. Oh, my God, he doesn't belong. Oh, my God, give him a month or two. Oh, my God, I think I want to see him starting. Like, they're a better team with him on the court.
And I think that's a situation where they didn't even really get to roll out the development track they would have liked to.
They pushed him back down to the G and gave him some confidence.
I mean, I think they'd have liked to do that at the beginning of the year.
Right.
But because of the way the roster was, like, he had to play more than they wanted, and I still think his development has gone pretty well since, certainly given the way his season began.
Yeah, in a tough situation. Let me give you guys who were bona fide NBA entities that other players and teams gave up on. Like, this team got the absolute best out of Zaza Pachulia. Leandro Barbosa might have been longer in the tooth when he got here, but he became the most effective version of himself. Sean Livingston, clearly. Mo Spates. Does anyone remember the artist known as Brandon Rush? When he wasn't hurt, they actually got more out of him than anyone. The ultimate project guy is JaVale McGee. Guess who gave up on JaVale McGee?
Everybody.
The NBA gave up on JaVale McGee. The NBA turned this young man into a punchline. Shaquille O'Neal had fun at his expense as if he was putting it on the Underhill tab. I mean, it was brutal. He was laughed out of the league. Warriors turned him into a competent player who then became an ultra-competitive minute guy when they asked him to do what they asked him to do, he went out and he did it. He won two titles and is now the starting center for the Los Angeles Lakers. Like, pretty good reclamation project. Kent Bazemore, Damian Lee, Quinn Cook, Ian Clark, guys who just aren't NBA players that they turned into NBA players and sent them onto NBA careers.
And you know what's interesting about some of these guys, and Livingston is the example that jumps to mind in relation to Wiggins, is coming here and becoming the best version of yourself didn't mean getting more minutes or more opportunities or scoring more or a lot of those normal ways we think about being your best self for a lot of guys.
Right. You need more shots.
Right. Sometimes it was less minutes in the right way. Sean Livingston never played 20 minutes a game here. And he was over 20 minutes a game almost every other year of his career. But he was put here in a role where his defense, his understanding of basketball, and the ability to hit his certain signature shots at any time made him the best version of himself. And when you look at Andrew Wiggins, he's not going to be his most scoring self, but I do think he can be his best self.
If he can assimilate
right
into next year's team.
Exactly.
Because all these other examples are not, for the most part, guys that you're looking at to play 30-plus minutes a night. They were guys who filled a niche and were easy to sort of fit into what the foundation was, which was much better other guys.
But
the Wiggins thing is different because they are expecting him, if this takes, to be one of those 30-plus guys. So in an unfair yet more realistic way, the comp here is Durant.
Or Draymond.
Maybe to a certain extent, if I get your point, but I mean, he's the guy they took off another team. Draymond was not.
Right. No, you're right. Yeah. But I'm just saying,
the only thing I'm saying is, Wiggins can't be evaluated by those other guys because the ask for him is bigger. If they intend to keep him, if all they're planning to do is turn him into more draft choices, then this argument is moot. But if they're planning to build around him and Curry and Thompson and Green and whatever the draft choice is, then he's different than all those other guys, and more is required of him.
The ask is bigger than Livingston, but the ask is smaller than the previous asks to Andrew Wiggins, right? I mean, that's the point I'm making. Not that he's similar to Livingston in that they'll only ask him to play 17, 18 minutes a game. He's similar to Livingston in that he's going to be asked to do both less and different things here than he's ever been asked to do before.
No, but they're still going to want him to play significant minutes that they never asked of Livingston.
Definitely.
And all those other guys that you mentioned.
Definitely.
He is, other than Durant, their most important import.
And think about what they did.
I think that's right.
We all evaluated Kevin Durant as, well, you can't get much better than the player that showed up. And then he got much better. He got much better, and maybe less is more. Is how he enjoyed playing some nights, his commitment to there was a point where Kevin Durant was leading the NBA in blocks. I don't know if he's going to do that in Brooklyn. I mean, let's see if he does or doesn't before we say he will or won't. But the best version I think anyone will ever have of Kevin Durant, and you could say, well, this is Achilles getting torn and you can't come back 100% after that. Sure, but the best version of Kevin Durant was here, with the players and the talent and the gravity around him. And if that all worked out for him, I think it's going to work out for Andrew Wiggins too. Andrew Wiggins might not be the committed to that basketball lifestyle penultimate grinder day after winning a title was in the gym at 4 a.m., which Kevin Durant was. I mean, he was obsessed.
But you just look at it. Ray's right. That's a great comp because Kevin Durant was a 28-plus point scorer most of his Thunder career. And here it was 25 or 26. But the percentages were higher, and he was doing more rebounding, and he was passing the ball more. And all that stuff was what those were the different asks the Warriors made of him as opposed to what the Thunder did. And I think Wiggins will be similarly different in terms of what the Timberwolves asked from him and what the Warriors
will. And here's
will.
The sales pitch. Hi, we're the Golden State Warriors. Most everything we touch turns to gold. Will you allow us to touch you?
Doesn't hurt.
We're going to do a good job if you just do what we say. Just be who we ask you to be. Give the effort that we require. And everything sort of finds its own level when people buy in like that.
The pitch is, do you want to be thought of as the Minnesota Timberwolves, Andrew Wiggins, or do you want to be thought of as ours?
Yeah.
Because as much as he did in Minnesota, it was A, not satisfactory, and B, not satisfying. And those are two different things, but they're very real about how people view him today. Not in the future, but today.
His text line makes a great point, you know, saying, you know, he's already a max contract player. I don't think money is the appeal for a guy like Andrew Wiggins. It's, would you like your reputation salvaged? Would you like to be regarded as someone worthy of general respect?
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.